The following is a presentation of the Town of North Hempstead's Project Independence and WCWP. Welcome to Project Independence and You.
Okay, welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM, WCWP.org. We're going to go right into old-time radio. Today's program is Suspense, Fire Burn and Cauldron Bubble, which was originally aired on April 6th, 1943.
This is the Man in Black, here again to introduce Columbia's program, Suspense. Our distinguished star this evening is the stage and screen favorite, Mr. Paul Lucas, whose performances in The Lady Vanishes and in the stage production The Watch on the Rhine you will recall with pleasure. Tonight's tale of suspense is a story by John Dixon Carr, Fire, Burn, and Cauldron Bubble. If you've been with us on these Tuesday nights, you will know that suspense is compounded of mystery and suspicion and dangerous adventure. In this series are tales calculated to intrigue you, to stir your nerves, to offer you a precarious situation and then withhold the solution until the last possible moment. And so with Fire Burn and Cauldron Bubble and the performance of Paul Lucas and the other members of our company, we again hope to keep you in.
Drury Lane Theater presents the distinguished American actor, Myron Willard, in Shakespeare's Macbeth, with magic effects especially designed by Ludwig von Arnheim. Historic Drury Lane Theatre, a relic of old London. On this site, in the cramped and crooked lanes of Aldwych, there has been a playhouse since Nell Gwynn sold oranges in the pit. The present theatre, though modernized, is heavy and darkened with time. By daylight, it is a dinginess of red plush seats, haunted by old ghosts. But at night, when the lights bloom for some new production, when the murmur of a crowd fills the carpeted aisles and the orchestra begins to tune up, it is kindled with that strange magic before the rise of the curtain.
What's this way, sir? E12 and 13 program. Pocket.
Thank you.
No, madam. This is row E. Your seats are G4.
And backstage, where nerves crawl and there is a tendency to scream, the three witches of the play are huddled around the peephole in the curtain, looking out into the audience. They are hideous-looking creatures, these witches, in gray rags like cobwebs. But as they speak...
Dear, I am scared.
Don't let it bother you, darling. You can't even see the audience when the floats are on. There's nothing to worry about.
Nothing except the size of the take at the box office.
You won't even have to worry about that tonight. Look out there.
You two are shaking as much as I am. Now, don't pretend.
All right, all right. Everybody's jumpy on first nights.
What I can't understand is why they want to use young girls as witches, and then make us talk in cracked voices as though we were 80.
Double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble.
What's that? Katie, darling, it's only one of the ghost effects. You've been hearing it for weeks at rehearsals. I will say this for Myron Willard, as an actor and a manager, too. He's the first one who's ever had a real professional magician to do the ghost effects for this ham show.
Oh, are they serious? Look there.
Where?
Out in the audience in the second upper box on the left-hand side.
Oh.
Don't you see the woman who's just coming in?
Yes, I can see her. Not a bad-looking bit of goods for her age. What about her?
But that's Marcia Blair.
Marcia Blair?
You don't mean you've never heard of her?
I can't say I have either if it comes to that. Move over, Ivy. Give us a squint.
Marcia Blair used to be Mr. Willard's leading lady. She was a very great actress 15 years ago.
Oh, 15 years ago.
She's had a terribly romantic history. Well, she's made lots of money and retired from the stage. Then she married some horrible no good. And did you see that tall gray-haired man standing beside her?
Well, he doesn't look much like a no good.
That's not the man I mean, Celia. That's Howard White, her second husband.
Oh.
They say he loved her for years and followed her about and practically worshipped her. But she was married to this no-good and wouldn't get a divorce.
Then the no-good died, I suppose. So Marcia Blair and her faithful Howard got married.
Yes. I remember reading in the paper that they'd been married 1 year tonight. I expect they're very happy.
Well, I'd be happy, too, if I had a mink coat and a string of pearls like that.
Well, you've got to admit she's beautiful.
All right, Katie, if you say so.
I used to go and see her act when I was a little girl. She was kind of an idol. I wonder what they're saying to each other up in that box now. I wonder what they're saying.
Marcia, dear, I wish you wouldn't be so uneasy. Nothing can happen to you here.
You're uneasy yourself, Howard.
Yes, I suppose I am a little.
Howard, I know I shouldn't be talking like this on our first anniversary, but that's what worries me. What if Barry isn't dead? What if he isn't dead?
Oh, listen to me, darling. Your late husband, heaven condemn his soul, died in New York more than a year ago. We have proof of that.
Well, then who wrote those letters to me?
I don't know, dear. Somebody playing a joke on you.
Joke? If you marry him, Marcia, you won't be alive a year from then. Joke.
But you're married to me, my dear, and you are alive.
Shall I quote you something from another play, Howard?
Well?
The Ides of March are come. I, Caesar, but not gone. And it's still 2 hours. 2 hours to the time we were actually married.
Oh, look here, dear. This is carrying an obsession too far.
It would be just like Barry to wait until the last moment, just to make it worse. You knew him.
Yes, I knew him.
He was a genius.
I suppose so. As a mere businessman, I never quite understood this theatrical temperament, except yours, of course.
Barry was a greater actor than Myron Willard will ever be. Barry could play anything, from a Cockney to King Lear. His skill at makeup wasn't merely good. It was terrifying. Oh, Howard, I am frightened. Suppose he's managed to get close to us tonight, and yet we can't see him.
Well, the music started, Marcia. I shall have to go.
Must you go, Howard? Really?
If I break this appointment with Ferndale, dear, the deal will be called off. And since I haven't got too much backing anyway, I...
All right, dear. I understand. Go ahead.
Unless you wanted to come with me.
And Miss Myron's opening tonight? Oh, I couldn't do that.
I tell you, you'll be perfectly safe here, dear.
Of course, Howard. I know that.
You're in full view of 3,000 people. Nobody could attack you. The only door to this box is guarded. Outside that door will be Miss Fenton, who's devoted to you. And a chauffeur who's even more devoted to you. What could happen, dear?
Nothing, of course. And I'd prefer to be alone anyway.
Yes, I rather guess that.
Oh, please, dear. It's just that I can't endure anybody being with me when I'm watching a great play. But that doesn't include you, darling.
Then if you'll accept these, madam, in honor of our first anniversary...
Oh, Howard. Well, they're lovely. Of course I'll accept them.
And here's a program. Got everything else you need?
Yes, I think so.
I'll just open the door to the passage to make sure our watchdogs are on guard. Yes, they're out there, all right. Good night, Marcia. See you in an hour or two.
Good night, Howard, and good luck.
Miss Fenton, Bradley.
Yes, Mr. White.
Yes, sir, anything wrong?
Miss Fenton, you've been my wife's companion secretary for 5 or 6 years.
Yes, Mr. White, and I've loved every minute of it.
And you, Bradley... You haven't been my chauffeur for quite so long, but they tell me you're an ex-wrestler.
That's right, sir. Champion of the Shoreditch Athletic Club. And in my prime, though I says it a shouldn't, as good a man as ever climbed through the ropes.
Now, you know your instructions, Bradley.
You trust me, sir. Nobody gets into this here box tonight unless it's over my dead body.
Nothing must happen, do you understand? Nothing.
Please, you're as white as paper.
As for you, Miss Fenton, I'm afraid it's a little awkward. I know I ought to ask you to go in and join Marcia, but...
Oh, you needn't apologize, Mr. White. I know she doesn't want company. She'll be leaning forward with her elbows on the box rail, just as she always does. She isn't merely watching a play. She's acting, Lady Macbeth. Every line, every gesture. And I don't mean to disturb her.
You won't leave this door, either of you.
You'll crush me, sir, if... no.
Anything wrong, Bradley?
It is a very rummy-looking cove coming along the passage, sir, wearing a big black cloak with a red lining.
Oh, that man, Bradley, that's only Herr von Auenheim. He's a professional magician and escape artist. I was just wondering... Excuse me.
Don't worry, Mr. White. We'll look after her.
Von Auenheim. I say, Von Auenheim.
Thou canst not say I did it. Never shake the gory locks at me.
I beg your pardon.
And I beg yours, my friend. I was merely quoting a line from the play. You are not leaving the theater. Surely not walking out on Macbeth.
I'm afraid I have got to.
Oh, that's a pity, my friend. You will miss some of my best effects, to say nothing of Shakespeare's. When Banquo's ghost appears at the table.
I don't want to hear any more about ghosts, thanks. Banquo's or anybody else's.
I imagine you mean your wife's late husband.
You've heard about it, then?
Yes, your wife has told me a good deal. She seemed to think that in my profession I might have some charm over demons or spell against ghosts.
You know, Von Arnhem, in a muddled kind of way, that's what I've been wondering myself.
Unfortunately, no. I am all too human. But your problem interests me. And I confess it worries me.
What is you? What about me?
As I understand it, her first husband was a half-mad American actor who later went completely mad and died in New York. His, what's the word I want?
Or obsession?
That's it, obsession. His obsession was Marcia Blair's eyes.
Yes, always her eyes. They seemed to hypnotize him.
It is not new, you know. You'll find the same motive, the eyes of a beautiful woman, all through the works of Edgar Allan Poe. Then, as I understand it, after this man's death, she began to receive a series of letters.
Foul letters.
Apparently written by him, and threatening her with some rather horrible form of death if she married you.
I tell you, Barry Lake is dead. He can't get up out of his coffin.
Oh, getting out of coffins, my friend, is not so difficult. I have done it myself.
Oh, please stop joking, Von Arnheim. You don't happen to be dead.
True. There is that small difference. Is your wife here in the theater tonight?
Yes. She wouldn't have come here except that it's Maren Willard's first night. And we haven't seen Maren, either of us, in years. She's back there in Box D.
So I hear. I was hoping that you might invite me to share the box.
Look here, old man. I don't want to seem inhospitable, but...
She doesn't want company?
Well, that's about it.
Well, then walk back a little distance with me, this way. So that we can see the stage from the back of the dress circle. Now the orchestra has stopped and they'll ring up in a moment. There. Look at it.
Look at what?
The stage, man. The lights have gone out. All except the dim yellow footlights shining on the curtain. The last cough, the last murmur, the last rustle of program dies away in one vast breathing hush. The curtain goes up.
Let go of my arm, Von Arnheim. I've got to leave.
Now, what are the stage directions? A desert place. Thunder and lightning. Enter three witches. When, indeed, I wonder.
I beg your pardon, Von Arnheim, do you speak?
No, it was nothing.